So a bit of a change of scenery today. Well, also a bit late today. So today is Saturday, it's not Friday. I've been really good at doing this on a Friday because of not having travel. It's much easier to do these things. But I just had a super early start yesterday. And then I woke up even earlier because I knew I had an earlier start. And my brain was just going, you're going to have to wake up soon. So I woke up like 2 a.m. yesterday morning. And by the end of the day, I was just done. So sorry for being a day late, but it's not like you're going anywhere anyway, right? So anyway, I thought I'd talk a little bit about that. Or actually, first of all, the different scenery. So I'm at the other side of my house. I'm in the garden. I just realized I've never done one from the garden. I reckon this garden looks pretty epic. For those of you listening, there's just like a massive leaf up here, which is probably full of spiders as well. So why not shake that one too hard? I was a little bit tempted to go and sit by the pool, but I thought, nah, I've done a lot of pool shots. I've done a lot of boat shots. Yeah, let's go tropical. So here we are in the garden. I didn't write anything this week in part because I was really busy with a couple of events. So I'm going to talk about those events in a moment. But I thought I'd, because it's obviously, we're all living kind of different to usual lives these days, not to mention different at the best of times. But I'll talk a little bit about what it's like here at the moment, because it really feels like things are starting to, in part, return to normal and in part just sort of settle down into a new cadence. So I sort of made a few notes beforehand, and like one of the bits of getting back to normal is we can now go and play tennis again. So there was a period there where the local court and a lot of other courts said, you know, nah, we're just shutting down for some period of time, and that was probably about 2 or 3 weeks. But as of about a week ago, the local court, which is about an 11-minute bike ride away with my son, a little bit less than it's just me, so the local court said, all right, you can come and play two on a court again. So he and I went and played, was it yesterday, day before yesterday, one-on-one, which is great. We've both been going back to coaching, so we can have a coach and one of us on the court again, which is nice. But then when you go there, the tennis club would normally have seats outside, and you could sit there and have a coffee or a beer or something. You know, that's not there at the moment. Can't play doubles at the moment, but you know, hey, we can ride down to the tennis court and have a hit, which is nice. The beach felt busy. So we had a little bike ride yesterday morning into Surfers Paradise, which is like the hub of the Gold Coast. And we were like having to dodge people on the footpath, and they were all out exercising, and they were sort of keeping, you know, obviously families together or the social distance thing, but it felt in many ways very normal. But then I drove back through that area at what, about 4:30 yesterday afternoon, and that's on a Friday afternoon, and there'd normally just be packed full of people and packed full of cars and, you know, nothing there. So obviously that's still got a little while to get back to normal. Another sign of normality is our two biggest supermarkets here, Coles and Woolworths, are now starting deliveries again. So normally I would try and be a bit organized and just keep adding things into the app on my phone and get to a point and then go, yep, deliver all the things for the coming week or whatever it may be. And obviously during Corona time, couldn't do that. They canceled all the deliveries certainly for people who weren't in need of special care, which I'm not in need of special care. So it was literally like go to the shops, but now deliveries are coming back, which is good. We've got at least another 4 weeks worth of homeschooling for parents who don't have essential roles. So certainly that's my case, as much as I'd like to think my role is essential, which means the kids will still be around for a while. And then it's going to get reviewed sometime in May. I think they said around about the middle of May. But the way we're tracking at the moment, I thought I'd talk about some Aussie stats. We're very, very likely to have the kids back at school, I think, by the end of next month, which, you know, again, will be another step back to normality. So one of the things I thought was interesting sharing here, and I appreciate none of this has got to do anything or has anything to do with InfoSec, but it has to do with something that is obviously impacting all of us now. One of the things I find really interesting here is just looking at the empirical numbers, because it can just be downright depressing reading the news headlines, and they are depressing. Not so much in Australia, and you'll see why in a moment based on the numbers, but you then get media spin and you get political agendas, and my God, don't even start on 5G. Holy shit, some of those people came out of the woodwork this week. Don't engage. Anyway, numbers. So there's a really interesting account here, which has got a lot of followers in a very short amount of time, 64,000 followers. It's called COVID_Australia. And this account has been very active, tweeting many times throughout the day what our empirical numbers are in Australia. So where we're at the moment in Oz, now just for context, so Oz, we've got about 25 million people in Australia. It's a landmass slightly smaller than the USA, a little bit smaller again than Canada, very similar in size to mainland Europe. So 25 million people, keep that in mind. So we've had a total of 6,677 cases in total across the entire coronavirus situation. Now, of course, that is only known cases. It is not the unknown cases. But if you compare that to many other parts of the world, obviously we're faring exceptionally well. We've also done 482,000 tests. So the testing regime looks like it's about to start getting expanded in Australia as well to frontline workers. So people that could be like police, nurses, etc., who may not necessarily be showing signs, which is interesting. Now, if we look at that, we've had, I guess, about 1.5% of people who've been tested have actually tested positive. And I might come back to that as well, because I should talk about the app, which keeps getting all the press. We've also had a lot of people recovered, and I think probably the easiest way to look at this is to look at the number of active cases. So across the entire country at the moment, we have 1,462 known active cases. And the interesting thing about this is that we don't have to spin back far through this timeline. So, you know, let's call it 1.4K something. If we go back to, let's just go back for a week and see where we were a week ago. 6 days. There's about 7 days. So we had 2,640 active cases only about a week ago. So we've almost halved the number of active cases in the space for a week. And of course, we have had deaths as well. We've had a total of 79 deaths in Australia. And that's obviously tragic for us. When we put that in the context of somewhere like the UK, where many people listen to this are from, where many of my friends are from, obviously that's a very, very different situation. So Australia has fared exceptionally well. And I think what's interesting now, looking at this, is when we see this kind of rapid decline of active cases, I would imagine, not a healthcare professional, but I would imagine that's going to give the government a lot more confidence to start gradually relaxing a little bit on restrictions over the coming weeks. So I'm really, really hoping that sometime in May we get to do everything from go out and sit at the coffee shop rather than take my breakfast away, as I did this morning, through to being able to go back on the water. So I have not gone out on the boat or the jet ski in recent weeks because it's not essential. You're not meant to. And as much as I don't think I'm going to catch or transmit anything by doing that, I think it's the right thing to do, just to sit at home in the garden. So we're tracking really well there. Now, the app, I didn't actually put this in my list of things to talk about, so I haven't given it much thought other than the discussions that have come up during the week. So it looks like probably next week, from what I've seen, we'll end up with an optional app for tracing. And I spoke about that, I think, last week, because I'd done a tweet storm on it. And, oh, man, people got upset about the tweet storm. Now, to be clear, it's the usual internet thing where most people are fine, this is great, this is insightful, and then there's like this noisy minority. But people are getting, I feel, and I'm a little bit cautious of my wording here, but I feel irrationally upset about many things. The privacy side of things, for example. It's like, I don't want to give away my privacy. It's like, well, okay, so you have privacy, then you install it, and then you don't have privacy? It's like, is that what you're saying? Because that does not make any sense. It is not an absolute. Incidentally, you're tweeting this to me from your smartphone, which is collecting a huge amount of data about absolutely everything you do. So clearly, privacy is a lot more nuanced than you have it or you don't have it. So that side of thing. One of the things that I saw pop up this morning as well is it looks like the government in Oz went through a tender process for a cloud provider to store, quote-unquote, the data. Now, I imagine, based on the way this application is meant to work, this is the data which is uploaded when someone who tests positive acknowledges that, and we take all of their contacts, and it gets stored somewhere central so that other people who have been in the same area can download that information, figure out whether they've been in contact. So that's the sort of level of data that we're talking about. Now, apparently the Oz government has chosen Amazon to be the cloud provider. And some of the headlines I'm seeing is stuff like, yeah, oh, now the US government can access our contacts and our interactions. And it's just, where do you even begin with everything that is wrong with that statement. One of the first things that struck me is, okay, so which Aussie cloud providers would we really feel confident enough doing this with? I mean, if you look at the matrix of who the big cloud providers are globally, I mean, who's going to be there? Obviously, Amazon is right up the top. Microsoft is doing well. There's Google Cloud. There's Alibaba. I tell you what, there's not to cast aspersions on Alibaba, but no one in their right mind is going to go, yeah, let's just put like contact tracing in a cloud owned by the Chinese. So that was obviously never going to happen. And then you start to get to all these like second and third tier players. And when I was reading the news this morning, and I think this was in the ABC, which is a pretty middle of the road objective publication as well, they were sort of mentioning a number of different Aussie cloud providers that I'd never even heard of before. So for something that is so important to the national health, do you really want to go and choose like a second tier provider? Now, number two, whether it was Amazon or if it had gone to Azure or Google or any of these sorts of things, there are Australian data centers. We can keep data sovereignty. We can keep it within our borders. And I saw one comment on there from one of the ministers saying it's like it's literally a criminal offence to export this data to somewhere else. And then the whole bit about, yes, but Americans could get access to it. Like, really, is this what we're worried about? Like, we're trying not to die and to get the economy kickstarted again, and we think that the US government's going to come and steal data about who we interact with. Tell you what, if I was the US government and I wanted data about who I interact with, I'd be going to the cloud providers and getting backups of people's movements, or just going straight to Google and say, you know how everyone runs that like Google Maps thing? It shows like just about everywhere you go. There's so many different places we have interactions and contacts that are already stored in service providers that are American in origin. One of the things that immediately came to mind as well is the, I think it was the Belfast case for Microsoft, where the US government, it was one court in one state from memory, demanded access to the data of someone that was stored in Belfast. And Microsoft fought that and won and did not have to export the person's data on the basis of they weren't within the jurisdiction of that court. And think about it from the cloud provider's perspective. And this was a discussion that was had many, many times after the Snowden situation. If we have a situation where a cloud provider, by virtue of being American in nature, which of course is all the big ones, the Alibaba thing aside, if we have a situation where they can't do business in a country without that country being scared of their information being exported to another country under a totally different jurisdiction, that is a massive issue for cloud providers, and it goes well beyond just this one contract tracing thing. So I felt that headline really misrepresented the actual situation and also the risk. Now, there's also been a bit of discussion going backwards and forwards about will it be open source, won't it be open source? I obviously vehemently believe it should be open source. I don't necessarily think that that's going to solve all the problems or that people won't still be upset about it, because then there's all the arguments about, well, how do you ensure that what has been open sourced is what's actually installed on the devices? But it does go a long way towards transparency and the government demonstrating that they want to be transparent. So I really, really, really hope that happens. And I hope people absolutely tear it to shreds. And what I mean by that is that I hope there are a lot of free penetration tests, and I hope there is some sort of responsible disclosure process where when people do find stuff, and they will find stuff because it is software made by humans, I hope there is a process for them submitting that, getting stuff fixed. I would suggest that this is not the sort of thing that we should necessarily be providing bug bounties for. Probably a terrible pun in there, but you get what I mean. Simply because this is something that's in the best interest of everybody, including the folks looking to find the bugs. Then, of course, the other bit is, you know, when I say in the best interest, there are people who are arguing that this is not something which gives us any health benefit. I'm not in a position to say whether it is or whether it isn't, because I don't know. It seems like a good idea, but then you'll get some healthcare professional who says it's not, and you'll get someone else who says it is. And I would suggest that for anyone who actually doesn't know, maybe just chiming into the echo chamber and saying, oh, this is crap because, is maybe not the best thing to do. Otherwise, we end up with a whole 5G situation again, where you will find experts who say that this like weakens the immune system, and because of the 5G towers, you might get coronavirus. So I'd much rather leave that to the people who actually know what they're doing. Anyway, by this time next week, or actually, hopefully 6 days if I get back on track, there might be an interesting story to tell about what's actually happened with the contact tracing app in Australia. Short of anything absolutely atrocious about the whole thing, I'll be running it, and I'll be happy to share with people what my thoughts about it are. Alrighty, so bit more intro there than what I expected. Let's talk about what I was doing this week. I was at NDC Porto from my office up there. So we did NDC Copenhagen a few weeks ago. I wouldn't have physically gone to Copenhagen. I was there last year, which was nice. I wouldn't have physically gone to Porto. I was there a few years ago, which was nice. But I did end up going there virtually, and Scott Helm and I did run Hack Yourself First at Porto this week. So we ran that online. Went fine. Same old story. Business as usual. I think we kicked off at 6 p.m. my time. I did the first session, which takes about 3 and a bit hours. So I did that. Scott and I bantered for a little while, then Scott took over and he did the last session both days. So the other events that we'll have coming up that'll be similar, the next big one will be NDC Oslo in June, which I have been to physically every single year since 2014. This will now be my first virtual year because it definitely ain't happening in person. So if you're looking to come and do a Hack Yourself First workshop, the next opportunity is NDC Oslo online. So we had those. The reason I was up so early yesterday morning was for Pluralsight's Tech Skills Day, which was an interesting little session, actually. So I was interviewed for probably about 20 minutes about some cyber things. I realized after, as I was looking at my emails this morning, it's like, oh, they sent me all the questions in advance. Oh, that's interesting. I have this is tangential now, but I have a personal policy on any of these interviews that I don't want to see questions in advance. I always have an answer, and I don't like the artificial nature of, like, let's have a live interview so it's like really natural. By the way, here's everything we're going to ask you. Can you please go away and prepare your answers? I just don't like that. I'd much rather be just talking off the cuff. And then if I don't know the answer for something, you know what I'll say? I don't know the answer. I'm okay not knowing the answer. So anyway, that was scheduled to be 5 a.m. my time yesterday morning, because America. So I set my alarm for 4 o'clock so I could get up early enough and caffeinate, and then I woke up like 2:15 going, is it time yet? So yeah, I was a bit ragged by the end of the day. So this is why we're late. On to other things. I do have a couple of other things. I asked the question during the week. In fact, let me see exactly how I phrase this question, because this did take me down a rabbit hole. I said, what fun little IoT projects have you done around the house looking for inspiration? And there's some really good ideas. And I started reading all these ideas. And now, mind you, like, I'm up to my eyeballs in backlog of data breaches and stuff to do for Have I Been Pwned and other bits and pieces people want me to do. I really don't have the time to do this, but it's really good fun. I wanted to do more IoT stuff. Anyway, someone somewhere along the line mentioned someone about, like, Lifex light panels. So IoT controlled lights, which are panels. And I had a bit of a look at that and thought, well, they're pretty pricey. Yeah, not so sure about those. And then a hop, skip and a jump later, and suddenly I'm reading about NanoLeaf. And NanoLeaf are also light panels, but they're triangular. They're about, if you look at the video, about this big, so maybe 20 centimeters on each side of the triangle. And you can buy a box of them that have 9 in them, and you just connect them together, sit them flat on the wall, and then the controller app can change the colors of them all. There's an add-on when you buy the rhythm one, which actually responds to noise. So if you're playing music, they flash in different ways. And I was like, my son would love this. Like, I have to have this. And within like an hour of the tweet, I discovered that they were for sale just down the road here at the JV Hi-Fi. So we went down there, we grabbed 2 boxes, because if he has one, his sister has to have one. And then we've come back, we've installed NanoLeaf. And it is awesome. It is so cool. We sort of mapped out on the wall where everything would go. There's got like the 3M command strips, like the double-sided tape ones, stuck them all on the wall. Just one little thin cable hangs down the bottom of them for power. You put that behind something or else, so it doesn't look too bad. And then it gets controlled by the app. And it is epic. And they're super bright too. So he normally sleeps with his curtains open, and I can be like outside 100 meters away. There's just sort of this glow coming out of his room. So he loves it. So if you haven't tried NanoLeaf and you want to do some fun IoT stuff, have a look at that. And they're infinitely expandable as well. Now, I'm not going to infinitely expand them because they do cost a bit of money. I think it was about $275 Australian for the 9 of them. I think in the US they run at like 170 US or somewhere thereabouts. But as a one-off installation, super, super cool. I've got a bunch of other IoT things I want to do. I really, really want to IoT my garage door because I'd like to be able to ask Siri to open the garage door. Plus, mine sounds like it needs to be replaced. Honestly, this is not just me trying to install new shit in my house. I really want to find an IoT water temperature sensor for the pool. And this is exceptionally hard. I mean, literally looking around at this for years. If anyone knows where to get an IoT water sensor temperature, I can put somewhere. I'd love to know about it. Now, as part of the whole IoT stuff, I've been putting a big amount of work into my Ubiquiti network, my version 2 of the Ubiquiti network, and I have been tweeting more photos. I've slowed down a little bit over the last few days because I haven't had a good thing to tweet. Now, it's not that I haven't had a good Ubiquiti thing to tweet, but I just haven't had a good use case because I've been trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to put some of these super nice cameras they gave me around the house. And the big barrier to the cameras is that they are wired and they're wired to Ethernet. So I need PoE and Ethernet itself. So I do actually need connectivity. So they're not Wi-Fi enabled cameras. Now the problem is I've got 32 different wired points around the house. None of them are where I actually want to put a security camera because I want them the places like up here. I want them outside. I don't want them inside, certainly not inside the living areas of the house. There's no reason, and I don't want to expose something which could possibly be exposed one day if something goes wrong. So I've been trying to figure out how to do it, and the best I can figure out at the moment is I had an electrician out the other day doing some other work, and we discovered that we can probably steal a couple of ports at one place, run them up through a void in the middle of the house. There is like a gabled roof right up the top. We can run the two cables out to different sides and we can have one pointing down that way at the back and one pointing this way at the front. And they're much higher than what I'd like, but it's about the only thing we can do. And then I'll just have to sort of zoom and enhance to cover the areas I want. And then the other idea I had, and I thought this was going to solve all my problems, is I can always take one of the access points that can wirelessly uplink. And I can PoE it, so I've still got to be near power, but I can PoE into the access point, I can wirelessly uplink, and then I'll use an access point with a secondary physical port. And with that secondary physical port, I can plug one of the cameras in there with its own PoE injector. So now I've got two PoE injectors, I need two power points, one powering the AP, which wirelessly uplinks, and then one powering the camera, which wires into the AP. Now that's what I've eventually done, and I've put one in my garage. I've put one of the little tiny ones, and actually I've got one of the dome ones in the garage, and I'm going to actually mount that on the roof. But even then, it's clunky. It's like it's sitting next to an access point, and it needs two power sockets. And anyway, I have been talking to Ubiquiti about this, and I've said I would really, really love you to do a solution, which was a Wi-Fi enabled camera. And it would be great to see some that might even be battery powered like the Arlo's as well. And the only problem is, and one of the reasons I'm sick of the Arlo's is I'm sick of replacing batteries. So you gotta trade off on something, right? But anyway, hopefully I'll mount the one in the garage today so at least I'll have one camera working. And then when the electrician comes out, we'll run the two wired ones. And that'll have to do me for a moment. Actually, the other thing on that, which was driving me crazy, is I wanted to put one in my boat shed because that's... Look, I mean, it's a bit like a garage. It's not a neat, pretty area like inside the house. I don't mind if I've got a couple of power sockets in there powering PoE. And the problem there is that the boat shed sits... And also, I appreciate how first world this problem is. Don't have to remind me. The boat shed sits under the house, and there's probably about 18, 20 inches worth of reinforced concrete over that, and absolutely no chance of any line of sight starting to mount external antennas. And what I found is that I've got one of the 8D access points from Ubiquiti up in the master bedroom. And when I'm down in the boat shed and I put one of the mesh APs all the way towards the door and the door to the boat shed is open, the RF seems to reflect back out and I can get like a 30% wireless uplink signal. As soon as I close the door, no signal. I was just absolutely tearing my hair out. And I've looked at so many different ways of actually running Ethernet down there, and there's just simply no way it's going to happen without major, major, major work. I just blew so much time this week because it was like, I'm a capable, creative guy. Like, I'll figure out a way to do this. Yeah, give me an hour or two, we'll have this up and running. And it's like half a day later, it's like, nope, not going to work. So anyway, that's my... That's my Wi-Fi woes. On to something different. oh boy. Nintendo. Now, I was getting a bunch of tweets. And I've said this before, like often I'll get up in the morning, there is a theme in my Twitter thread. And this was about Nintendo, air quotes, hacked. And it is just the absolute same old predictable story every time. A whole lot of people say that someone else has just taken over their Nintendo account. They swear that they've got good passwords. Then the organization themselves comes along, Nintendo in this case, and says, no, you've just got reused passwords from other data breaches. And it just fits perfectly. Now, that's not to say that Nintendo could not possibly have a data breach that leads to this. But when you see this pattern, a subset of customers, and obviously some attack at some point in time where a whole bunch of them pop up at a similar sort of space and time and also the same thing, it absolutely reeks of credential stuffing. So I've shared here, there's an account called Nintendo Life. It looks like a non-official Nintendo account. The latest Nintendo Switch news, reviews and opinions. It does have 178,000 followers by the look of it. And they tweeted, Nintendo confirms that around 160,000 accounts may have been hacked. Personal info possibly at risk. And again, it's like a misleading headline because you then drill into it. And there's a translation here. There's an embedded tweet translation. It says, this message is regarding the reports of unauthorized access. We would like to inform you on how to secure your Nintendo account and reset your password. Recently came to our attention that login IDs and passwords have been obtained illegally by sources outside our service to impersonate users to access Nintendo Network since the beginning of April. And it frustrates me on both sides, actually, because for individuals, all right, just stop doing this. Stop reusing the same shit password everywhere. So this is going to keep happening. But it frustrates me also because surely Nintendo, of all companies, you know, they are a gaming company with accounts, should have been looking and seeing the likes of this happening to the likes of everyone from Disney Plus through to Nest just over recent months. I mean, this is a massive thing. But it is just credential stuffing again. And I tweeted this and I hashtagged Nintendo, Nintendo hacked. Nintendo not really hacked. Humans still the weakest link. Stop using stupid passwords. it's just another day on the internet, isn't it? Now, speaking of days on the internet, a couple new data breaches this week for Have I Been Pwned as well. The big one here was a service called Aptoid, which is an independent Android app store. What could go wrong? 20 million users in their data breach. Data included email and IP addresses, names, and SHA-1 password hashes with no salt. Only 38% of those already in Have I Been Pwned, so I suspect the demographic for Aptoid is not mainstream Western countries. What's a mainstream Western country? Mainstream users. I mean, very often when I see percentages that are in the 30% or lower, it's like it's a Chinese service or something that doesn't sort of represent where the bulk of credentials already are and Have I Been Pwned. So this one was kind of funny, actually. Well, as funny as a data breach can be, because if I go to the Aptoid website, we'll see if it's still there. Let's actually just go to aptoid.com. We'll see if they've updated their blog website. I want to get off the blog subdomain to aptoid.com, and their website still says, discover and distribute top apps in the safest Android app store. What? How is that safer than like the Google Play store? I don't get it. But yeah, anyway, whatever. So that was the situation with the data breaches as well. All right, so last thing, sponsorship this week is Veronis again. So big thanks to Veronis. So they're talking about security, FWD, brand new YouTube show from them. Watch episode 1 on how fast Wi-Fi can travel. And I'm sure you would have seen Veronis here on the sponsorship page before. Long time, good relationship with those guys. Back in the day, I used to actually travel places and do things with them. I'm sure it'll happen again. In the interim, at least they're there on the blog sponsoring me. So thank you very much to Veronis for sponsoring me. Thank you very much for watching this slightly later one this week. And I'll try and get back onto schedule for next week. And let's see what happens over the next 6 days. Thanks, folks.